Okay, so I have with me Claire Robinson. She's the editor of GM Watch. Claire, thank you so much for joining us. You're calling in from the UK, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Well, thank you for inviting me. It's kind of very early morning here, but I'm just about awake.
Okay, so how many years have you been dealing with this subject?
With genetic modification since 1998, that's when GM Watch was founded under another name, but we gradually got more larger in scope, shall we say. It started off very local, and then we realised it was a national issue, and then quickly it became an international issue. So we've expanded our scope, and we're now we look internationally at developments in the area of genetically modified crops and foods and their associated pesticides. And we take a critical view, because there's not a lot of critical views out there, especially at the moment. People have got very, very seduced by the idea that genetic modification is going to solve a lot of problems.
Okay, so that's where I wanted to get to start with, is why have we been seduced back into it? Because I remember a number of years ago, genetically modified crops were the things people used to march against.
Yeah, indeed. What's happened is that really the genetically modified crops that have already been out there and been sold and been planted by farmers, the technology has been quite a widespread failure. I know it might look as America and South America, there's a lot of farmers to GM crops. Problems with the herbicide tolerant GM crops, where farmers have had to spray more and more herbicides in order to control the weeds that grow in those fields. There's a problem known as super weeds, whereby the weeds get resistant to the herbicide that is sprayed on these crops. The GM crop itself is tolerant to the herbicide. It can survive the spraying. And increasingly, the weeds are evolving to resist the herbicide spraying. And we've ended up in a situation of super weeds taking over fields. So that technology is failing. And also the BT insecticide producing crops. This is another kind of GM crop. It produces an insecticide in every cell of the plant. And the idea is that the pests feed on the plant and then they die because there's an insecticide being expressed. But actually, the pests are, of course, evolving resistance to the BT toxins. So again, that technology is failing. And now the industry has come up with a very clever ploy, I think, which is to try to draw a line under those failed GMOs. They've also failed in the sense that consumers have resisted them. So wherever you find that GMOs are labelled in food, the consumers won't buy them. So the industry is having to think of a ploy to get around that. The way they've done it is that they've drawn a line under the old GMOs and said, forget about those old GMOs. We've now come up with new gene-edited GMOs. And these are going to succeed where the old GMOs have failed and they're not really GM at all. They're in a process of taking out these new GMO organisms from the GMO regulations that have been established around the world in an attempt to really have a free-for-all for these crops and foods and get them into our food supplies unlabeled so the consumers cannot reject them.
So this is not just a New Zealand move for deregulation. This is a movement that's happening worldwide. Is that right?
Yeah, it's happening worldwide, all over the world. You find the same messages being used everywhere. I mean, when I read the arguments that are being presented in New Zealand for deregulation, as they call it, it's exactly the same arguments as are being used in the EU and have already been used in the UK, where I live. We've passed our own GM deregulation law in 2023, so that's already in place. It's not actually been implemented yet. We're waiting on the secondary legislation to do that. And various other countries have also deregulated gene-edited crops and foods
So
and animals, by the way.
have you been able to track where this is coming from, who's writing these things? It just seems like the same old story over and over again. They're using exactly the same arguments all around the world in lockstep and so many different things, and this is just another example of that.
Yeah, most certainly the arguments are coming ultimately from the industry. But what has happened is that the industry now has a whole bunch of scientists who are dependent on industry funding. These are career genetic engineers who spend their lives developing GM crops and increasingly gene-edited crops. Gene editing, I want to emphasize to your listeners, is a form of genetic modification. That's technically the case, it's scientifically the case, and until now, it's been legally the case as well. And the industry wants to say, oh no, this is not GM at all. But these arguments for deregulation are coming from the industry. They often come through scientist mouthpieces, as I call them. I don't mean to be insulting there, but the arguments that these scientists are using are precisely the arguments that industry uses. Oh, it's not really GM, you know, it's different from GM, which is false.
Okay.
They say it's precise, predictable, again, which is completely false. And there is now a huge body of scientific literature showing that these techniques are not precise. Gene editing, unintended changes, unintended outcomes in the plants and animals that it's applied to. So, really, we're being lied to. And unfortunately, the politicians are listening to people who I would call salesmen for GM technology.
I always wonder about when they talk about how they can just switch on and switch off little strands of the DNA and so on. I always remember years ago hearing for the first time the term junk DNA and thinking it was quite an arrogant kind of term to think that the scientists couldn't figure out what those ones are for, so they're basically junk. Yet they still want to think that they can just switch on and switch off.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people like you and I, who are not specialists in this field, we're not genetic engineers, we're not scientists, that's what I mean. We can see that it's obvious that genes operate in a network. They're not just individual entities that you can cut and paste and turn on and turn off without affecting all the other genes in the organism. It's a kind of total system. It's a network. And when you touch any part of that network, it is going to affect other things. And what we're worried about with genetically modified crops and foods, whether they're gene edited or older style GM, is that those foods, those crops can inadvertently become toxic or allergenic. Their composition can change. They can have unexpected effects on wildlife. Any of these things can happen. And in New Zealand, you're even planning to deregulate microorganisms. And that's a whole other field of risk. You know, if you start genetically engineering bacteria, who knows what the upshot is going to be? But very easily, it could produce pathogens, novel pathogens.
Okay, there's another argument. The other argument is that we've got too many people in the world today. We need crops which we can grow faster and we can grow more, so that we can feed the world. This is a lot of what they're selling the deregulation of gene technology here in New Zealand on. What do you say to that?
Well, so far, there has been never been a GM crop that can reliably increase yield. And there's some very high-level people who admit this, including the USDA in America, the National Academies of Science and Medicine in America. They've all admitted that so far, GM crops have not increased yield. There is no GM gene for higher yield. It doesn't exist. And I think that when people think of GM crops, there's a kind of legacy of science fiction in many people's minds that, you know, they think of these giant crops that like triffids or something, but, you know, yeah, benevolent triffids that are going to grow huge. But actually, the amount of yield that can be got out of a crop is finite. But we have so many resources that can go into growing crops. We have free energy from the sun. We have soil that, if we look after it, it will produce good crops for us. We're already producing far more food than the world needs to feed itself. We produce at the moment more food than we'll even need at peak population in 2050. So there's not a problem with too little food in the world. In fact, there are surpluses, agricultural surpluses, and most of those surpluses at the moment are going into things like biofuels and animal feed. These are basically ways to use up agricultural surpluses. And as we know, the more abundant a certain crop becomes, particularly commodity crops, the farmers, the profits for the farmers just shrink and shrink and shrink. We're in a situation at the moment in the UK and the EU where we produce too much milk. And so the amount of money that the farmer gets is gone right down, and it's less than the cost of production. And this is what we find, you know, we're producing too much food. Even in countries that have hunger problems, the problem there is poverty. It's that people cannot afford to buy food. And that is a social, economic, political problem.
Okay, here's another one. What's the harm? I mean, they keep telling us that there's no science, that there's no evidence that genetically modified food actually harms anyone.
Actually, there is. Animal feeding studies have been done with these crops, and they have shown that some GM crops are unexpectedly toxic or allergenic. Now, that I wouldn't say by any means that all GM crops are toxic or allergenic or dangerous. I don't think they are. But some of them are, and when they've been fed to animals, you do see adverse effects. And it's things like liver toxicity, kidney toxicity, immune responses. These are all health problems that are really epidemic in the world today. So many people have liver problems, for example, kidney problems, immune problems, autoimmune disease, allergies. To what extent do GM crops and pesticides contribute to that? Nobody knows. But we have the animal feeding studies. We know that some of these crops are not good. They are what a scientist told me some years ago. He said it's not that they are acutely toxic. I think we would have picked up on anything that's, you know, you eat it and you keel over dead. That is not going to happen. But he said what is the case is that these are slow poisons. It's like cigarettes. You don't smoke one cigarette and keel over and die. But they are slow poisons that if you smoke them for decades or some years, you know, you are likely to suffer health effects. And so there are problems with GM crops. They are denied by governments and industry, but the studies are out there. They can be consulted. We wrote a book called GMO Myths and Truths, me and a couple of genetic engineers. It's out there, and it has a whole chapter summarizing the animal feeding studies with GM crops. And these problems of toxicity, allergenicity, they can happen with gene-edited crops just as much as the older style GM crops. So that's the main thing that I'm worried about. Other people are worried more about the environmental effects, which is another unknown. We simply don't know. If we're changing the composition of a plant in a certain way, it could affect wildlife.
So, are you saying that we should be banning all of this work, or are you saying that we just need more regulation?
I think that there is no mileage whatsoever. At this point in history, there is no mileage in asking for a ban on GM crops. I certainly aim to ban them from my own food supply, but I think politically there isn't support for that. What we're asking for is regulation, continued regulation of all GM crops, be they gene edited or older style GM. The regulations that are in place already are quite able to be slightly adapted to deal with these new gene edited crops and foods. And I think that's what should happen. We should maintain risk assessment for health and environment, which in New Zealand is in place at the moment. In the EU, it's in place at the moment. We don't want to throw that out. We want to keep it so that the regulators will be looking at possible effects on health, on the environment, and the industry applicant has to do certain tests in order to rule out the obvious harms that could happen.
One of
And
the
also, we want to keep labeling, very important.
Okay, but all of those things that you just mentioned there, this gene technology bill that is now going through Parliament, and I see that you've actually written about it in GM Watch, so you're across that one. All of those things that you just spoke about there, the precautionary principle among them, and the labeling, they're being thrown out in this bill. This sounds to
Indeed,
me
they
like a
are.
very dangerous situation to be putting ourselves in.
It's incredibly dangerous. What you will lose is risk assessment for health and the environment. You'll lose the labeling. You'll lose the notification even. So nobody will know what's actually out there, which is a real problem. If any problem occurs to people's health or the environment, you want to know what's already out there and what's in the pipeline. But if you get rid of notification, that simply won't exist. And this proposed deregulation would benefit nobody apart from GMO developers, the GMO industry. That's what it's being pushed to benefit. And nobody else will benefit. Everyone else will suffer and put themselves at risk.
Why do you think New Zealand's doing it? Do you like one theory that I've heard is that it's part of the free trade agreement with the United States. Do you think that holds any water, or do you have any other ideas of why they might be being so aggressive with this?
It's possible that it's part of free trade agreement with the United States because the United States has traditionally been extremely aggressive in lobbying countries to weaken their GMO regulations. And I know that has happened in the UK. Boris Johnson, our former prime minister, who basically set this deregulation thing in place, I know that he was talking to America. He was influenced by America. America has been extremely aggressive in bullying countries to lower their standards on GMOs. But the big irony in this current situation is that actually the US regulations on gene editing are tighter than what New Zealand is proposing to do. And that is very interesting. The US had proposed to deregulate to some extent gene edited crops, but they were restricting it to a certain number of gene modifications and where they could be. And they had planned to deregulate, but then there was a court case brought by the Center for Food Safety. And in December just passed, the court ruled that the deregulation could not happen, and that basically the US had to put back its GMO regulations to how they were previously. So they will maintain risk assessment, they will maintain a kind of labeling, they call it bioengineered in the US. But basically, what New Zealand is planning to do goes beyond what even the US is doing. And I can only think that the US is pressuring New Zealand and that It's almost like they want New Zealand to set the deregulatory precedent so that others will follow.
Okay, to wrap up, here in New Zealand, we're going through our submissions process at the moment on that bill. I believe they close on February the 17th. What are the dangers that when people are giving their submissions, what are the dangers they should be highlighting to our members of parliament as they contemplate this bill?
I think basically what they should do is read the GM Watch article, gmwatch.org. We've just written quite a long, detailed article on the points that they should be bearing in mind. If people can go to the submission of Professor Jack Heineman, and the organization that he runs, which has to do with biosafety at the University of Canterbury, New Zealand, that is linked to in our GM Watch article. It's a little bit technical, but if you read it, you know, with patience, you can get the gist of what Heineman and his colleagues are saying. There's also a handy summary at the start that you can use. And very much put it in your own words when you write your submission. Do please send a submission to this public consultation. It's very important. Use your own words and bring your own feelings and experience into it. You know, if you have a kid with allergies, say you want to know how your food is produced, you want to know the potential risks. So keep labeling, keep the risk assessment. Particularly the health risk assessment, you know, you want to keep that. If you're a farmer, you can talk about contamination of your crops, that you want to keep your crop GM free, etc. And again, that you want to know what's out there. So clear labeling of seed, clear labeling of crops and foods is necessary. So use your own words, because if you copy someone else's words, I know from experience, the government will dismiss your complaint and say, they're just part of a campaign. And even if 200 people from a campaign write in and they use the same words, they'll count it as one objection. It's sneaky, but that is the truth.
Okay, last question. What's at stake here?
What is at stake here is people's health and environmental safety. And also the future of our food supply. We want to keep genetic integrity in the food supply. We want to keep biodiversity in crops. We want to keep a healthy environment. We want wildlife that we don't introduce new threats for it to face. And we want to keep our healthy food supply so that we can eat with confidence, we can feed our kids. And we're not facing unknown risks that we can't trace if something goes wrong. So there's a huge amount at stake. And please do what you can to persuade the New Zealand government not to go down this route. It won't benefit anybody apart from the Monsantos, the Bayers, the Cortevas of this world.